Billtrip allows businesses to automate any complex back-end workflows and AI workflows.
Where do you prioritize capital?
It's more branding than how the secret recipe. There is a little bit of a secret recipe, but it's a lot more branding.
Everybody can build products these days. High quality product combined with a great distribution that becomes part of your story of your company. That's what it is.
Cursor. Is it a hit or a miss and why?
The less people pay, the more demanding they are.
Hot take. Isn't that funny? Who's your favorite kind of customer then? Hello and welcome to In the Blink of AI, your weekly front row seat to the AI revolution. I'm Georgie Healy, and this week I am speaking to Shams and Harini. They're co-founders of the AI startup Billtrip. On the show, we talk about vibe coding with the best AI tools, tech product hits and misses, and mistakes in early hiring. If you thought that might be spicy, you'll have to stay till the end for the rapid-fire spicy questions. Shout out for next week, where we speak to the fastest growing startup in recent Australian history. You won't want to miss it, so subscribe now so it's waiting for you next Friday. Let's dive in.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Hi guys, it's the Billtrip founding team. We've got both Harini and Shams here, two people I really genuinely admire, and we'll talk about what you're building. But you know, I'm just genuinely so excited to have you on In the Blink of AI, a topic that you guys definitely can help us dive through. Harini, tell all the listeners who might not be familiar, what is Billtrip?
Yeah, so Billtrip allows businesses to automate any complex back-end workflows and AI workflows. So think of it like a platform on which you can create lead qualification, where you can actually go and enrich your data. So any kind of workflows that you are thinking about automating in your business, you can get started with Billtrip and continue to expand and scale on it.
I want to say the elephant in the room, which is, you know, Shams is the CTO, Harini's the CEO. I believe you guys have those titles. But I feel like, Harini, you can go technical, and Shams, you can also go sales when you need to. You guys are quite the powerhouse. Shams, how did you guys meet?
Harini recruited me, actually. So
really?
We met at Antler, the VC program.
You started as a hire and you worked your way up. Now you're a co-founder.
Yeah.
I've got to know, what makes a great partnership? Because you guys, to me, seem very simpatico. What about the partnership do you think works really well?
I think, I can tell from my point of view, I think we worked really well together as a team in our previous job, and kind of that translates. So it started as a working kind of relationship, and then we kind of continued to communicate and ideate and kind of start building things together. So that kind of a spark of someone who can actually communicate well with and quickly experiment and do things with, that's kind of what hit it off here.
And Shams, what's special about Harini that made you want to dive into this long-term relationship, which is a startup?
I think it's similar with every other relationship, I would say. It's all foundationally, it's about like trust and respect. And at the end of the day, you're on the same boat and you're both trying really hard to make things work out. So
great answer. What about friends? Can friends be co-founders, or like hot takes only, guys? Do you think that would work or not work? And have you seen it work or not work in tech? And I want you both to answer this.
So I've tried. I think it could work. I don't see it as a problem. I think it's, you still have to be picky with who you're, like what the complementary skill sets are. So if there is complementing, then it would work. But if it's not, it doesn't actually work. But either way, I think there's no such a thing as like failure. There's always learning and growth. So there's no like, oh, don't try.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard. I mean, as long as the friendship kind of doesn't get in the way of handling the business side of things or like having that hard conversation, sometimes, you know, you want to balance both relationships and it might get like tricky or murky. So if you're able to have that kind of difficult conversations and not think about it just like a friendship and think about it from the mindset of what's best for the business, then it could work out. But I feel it might be hard.
Yeah, I love your honesty. There's a very famous program in Australia where it's an accelerator where it's, you know, all people that want to start a business, but it's 90 days and you find your co-founder in that time. And I think it's very rare that within 90 days you can find a co-founder that you can see it through the tumultuous time of a startup. But I also am not sure I'd want to do it with my best friend either. Prefer to stick to having wines with them. This is a recurring segment of the show. It's one of my favorite parts. It's called AI Hack of the Week. So we're going to go around and share an AI hack or tool that we like, and so that listeners that are listening can try something new every single week. And this week they get three for the price of one. Harini, can you start us off? What's your hack of the week?
I think I just literally built one today where I just want to get into my house and open the door. And like, I'm also, when I get out of the house, I want to order a cab. So essentially like a workflow that allows me to do that with just a voice command. That's something that saved my own life, a quality improvement. But
okay,
yeah,
stop. How?
Obviously using Billship. So I'm going to plug in there. But
please.
Like on Billship, you can have like workflow that starts off either with like an iPhone shortcut or a WhatsApp message. And we have to hear, I mean, I used to use Uber, but I have a kid. So I have to use 13 cabs, like a cab service, the old school style where you have to call and book a cab. And so on Billship, you can just use like a voice agent to make that booking and, you know, make the address and like conversation style stuff. And it's an AI assistant workflow on Billship.
And how does it open the front door? I'm so confused.
No, that's another separate workflow. So you can have multiple workflows where it kind of detects the proximity and you can use like a...
So there's a sensor near your front door and it knows that it's you and not a stranger on the street. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's connected to my phone, basically.
Harini, will there be a tutorial?
Yeah, I'm planning to make a tutorial on this.
Can you do this within the next few days and we'll add it in the show notes, guys? That would be amazing. Thank you so much. Sorry, Shams, that's going to be hard to beat, but you're next.
I'm going to preface something, by the way, for Shams. So Shams, once he has moved to SF, he has literally won all the hackathons there. So he's actually the...
Oh, you've won hackathons. So tell me your most recent hackathon that you won and then follow it with your hack of the week, Shams.
I did one where I was like, you give the pitch deck to the AI and then it goes and does like background research on like analyzing the pitch deck, checking like who the team members are, and then like summarizing that and then like scoring based on like the founder fit and the product fit and then like assessing.
Yeah, gee,
like,
I wonder why investors liked that. Can't even imagine. That's amazing, because they go through thousands of pitch decks a year, right? So, okay, I can see why you won that. What's your hack of the week?
Yeah, it's all about like finding the right solution for the audience, right? So, yeah, I mean, this week I've been trying, I put Claude Code in Cursor and that's like a way to like vibe code a lot faster. It's been fun.
Yeah, I've heard this Claude and Cursor relationship really popular with even the non-technical founders. What's your favorite thing to do in there? Because I'm a bit overwhelmed. I'm not even sure what I would start with if I had those both in a split screen. Like, what can a novice do with Claude and what would they put in there?
I think it's like creating tools that are like, just like, you know, like you need something that you want to like part of your process. Like, for example, imagine you're like, you want to do something to do with like photo editing. And instead of like learning Photoshop, you like ask AI to generate a tool that does a certain, like gives you that specific feature. And then it makes that experience of like doing that task a lot easier. So whenever you have a task and you want to like partially automate it or like make it like feel more productive or like help you create something. So that I feel like creating new tools is really useful and pretty handy.
I want to be a vibe coder. I vibe coded once using Lovable and got it kind of 80% of where I needed it to be using ChatGPT in the side window. But everyone that actually knows what they're doing says it's got to be Claude and Copilot together. So clearly I've missed a trick there.
I use Lovable too, I guess. It's like it really depends on what level of thing that you want the end result to be. So if you want something like quick, then you just like talk to Lovable and then build it. If you want something more complex, then you need Claude. If you want something that's like production and you wanted to make sure that you know what's being built and you want to like you're going to deploy it and you're going to use it for a lot of users, then you should use Buildship, because there's always different levels of things that you want to use. You don't want to just like just use Buildship for everything, or just use Lovable for everything. It's just, you got to use the right tool for the task.
So Basecamp, Lovable, we're halfway up the mountain. We're using Claude and Copilot. And then when we played with a few tools, we're good vibe coders, we're ready for the next step, we can start using Buildship, correct?
When you want to create more of a system and then you want to make sure that you have something that is like going to be used on like an enterprise scale, right? And you want to be able to see like, okay, because with Claude, and like especially with Claude Code, is that you just say what you want and then it builds the thing and then you see the result, but you don't actually know what's inside. And then it depends, do you really care what's inside? If you're just playing around and you're making something and it's working for your use case, then it's fine. You don't need to know what's inside, right? But if you're handling user data or things that could be potentially sensitive and you want to be like, okay, I need to make sure that this data is not going somewhere, all the code that's running is trusted, then you need something else, right? So it varies.
Beautifully articulated. That's fantastic. Yeah, I don't need to pop under the hood, but maybe one day I do. So great distinction. Look, my hack of the week, I recently came back from Europe. I know. It's really mean to say, but it's made me realize how much I do need two or more LLMs on my home screen at all times. My husband had Gemini on his home screen. I had ChatGPT. Believe me, the fact that I work at Google is not lost on me, the fact that we were switched up that way. But we'd keep asking the same prompt and sharing the, like, what did you get? What did I get? And there was no clear winner. They both were good at different tasks. One example I'll give is we were in Monaco and there's a beautiful car museum all the way from like Ford Model Ts to Max Verstappen's F1 car that he's raced in, right? And my husband stood in front of four amazing, beautiful classic cars. And we put the same prompt and the same photo into Gemini and ChatGPT. Gemini got 2 out of 4, ChatGPT got all 4, correct? Like perfect model year, perfect everything. But then when we were in Rome and I wanted to see Caravaggio paintings in certain churches, it could, because it's integrated with Google Maps, it would say, based on your location, 6-minute walk that way. ChatGPT can't do that. So I don't know. Do you guys use multiple LLMs on your phone home screen, or am I wrong and I've missed something?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think different use cases, different LLMs are good at it. I mean, I use like Perplexity for kind of search-based stuff, or ChatGPT. We have like, you know, a bunch of task-based folder structure on ChatGPT where you can specify what task it is good for and kind of dump data there and get some kind of structured output as well. So it depends on what you're using for. Obviously, Claude is good for coding, or like depends on the use case effectively. Eventually, I'm guessing all the LLMs kind of merge to single.
I hope so. That would make it easier, wouldn't it? And then you're only paying $30 a month and not multiple. Okay, let's get into headline news, guys. Oh, yeah, sorry, Shams. Tell us.
I mean, I like your, like, the Google Maps integration, right? And that's something that that companies can add value on top of the, like, the LLM inference, right? So, like, as LLMs keep improving, you still need that, like, differentiator And how does your LLM provide better solution by integrating into the like the ecosystem that you've built out?
Yeah, it's great for, you know, add this to my Gmail calendar and things like that. Admittedly, Google has got some extra little perks and integrations that are clever. But yeah, I'm not loyal to anyone. Okay, let's dive into headline news because, you know, I really love having experts in the AI and tech space to unpack things that those of us are reading the headlines and thinking, is this worth worrying about? Is this something that's important? So the first one is, you know, we're going to play a little game of the biggest tech products for tech people. And you're going to tell us if they are a hit or are they kind of a miss. So everyone has heard of the product Midjourney. Shams, what is Midjourney and is it a hit or is it a miss?
I would say it's a hit. Midjourney like led the way in terms of the quality of the images that I was able to generate, and now they're like generating videos as well. I think they focus more on like creatives rather than, so they don't have an API compared to other models. They focus more on like creative people using their product directly versus other image generation platform or video generation companies where they're monetizing on their API as well. So I think it's interesting that they're not exposing the API compared to like everyone else does expose the API.
Okay, so we'll take it as a hit, but they have room to grow perhaps. What about Replit, Harini? What is Replit and is it a hit or a miss, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a hit. So essentially, Replit is a platform on which you can create apps and websites and things like that. Essentially, I think it's more geared towards people who are learning to code. I think they are hit in terms of like integrations. They have like good integrations, I believe, with Google Cloud. They also like launched like a mobile app and things like that. So yeah, I think it's a great platform to learn coding and combination of vibe coding and front-end app building.
Well, I've got you. Cursor, is it a hit or a miss and why?
I mean, I think everybody in our team, maybe Sharon should answer it, but everybody in our team uses it, or we are trying to get everybody to use it. I tried to create like a quick feature the other day without creating like a linear item and a ticket for the devs. It seems to be doing well. But yeah, maybe Shams can answer this better. He uses it every day.
Yeah, tell us, Shams. Do you agree that it's a hit?
Maybe it's a temporary hit. I mean, it's such a competitive space, you know, like you have Windsurf, you have Cloud Code, and they're all competing in the general, like, we'll code anything for you space. So it's a competitive space that we're all in. So I feel like every day someone is ahead and then, yeah.
It's such a great point you make. Like some of these things might be hits as products, right? They're easy to use. The UI UX interface is brilliant. They do what they're meant to do. They solve a problem. But are they a hit from an investor standpoint? Maybe not, which is why I'm not an investor and I just get to play with products and say whether I like them or not. We've got one last one, and this might be a Shams question, but Harini, feel free to give your take as well because it's quite technical, like in terms of community. GitHub Copilot. Is this a hit or a miss, Shams?
I think I'm not sure who, like, it started as the OG, right? Of like vibe coding or like before vibe coding where it's like you ask AI to do something and it does that. But then I think as development becomes more agentic, it might have lagged behind and they've updated some stuff. But I feel like Cursor did it earlier and then attracted people's attention. So then like I haven't used Copilot.
It could have been a hit, but it's a miss. Yeah. It should have been what Cursor and other, I think there are like a lot of smaller tools that have come up that are more successful. Like there are specific tools geared towards PR reviews, for example. All these things, I think GitHub would have done it themselves, but they missed the boat, I guess.
So you think going after certain verticals and nailing that might be a better approach? Maybe our first miss on the list. It's good to have a miss. Guys, we're talking about tech products for tech people for the most part. Those last four options, Midjourney, Replit, Cursor, GitHub. Buildship's a tech product for, I would say, tech literate people. You guys might be like, oh, you don't have to be that tech literate. You need to be more tech literate than me, okay? When it comes to creating a product and a business that's for developers or this kind of community that's already tech literate, what do people get wrong? And what's important to have a hit and not a miss? Haren, you start us off.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, even if you're building a tech product or like you need to understand the users or like who it is for, I think what people get wrong is get carried away with building cool features and like amazing things. Especially, I think, you know, as technical founders ourselves, we kind of got into that loophole as well. But what is more important is like, actually, are you solving real problems for real people and businesses? I think that's what it is that people should focus on.
Great answer. What do you think, Shams? Would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think unless you're a giant organization and you're trying to take over everything, being focused on a specific problem that you want to solve and trying to narrow it down, I think like even for us, it's really hard to like, because as founders, you try to be as ambitious as possible and you're like, okay, I'm gonna build this amazing platform that solves everyone's problems. And then if you try to do that, then you end up struggling to like balance everyone's needs. So it's easier to like make sure that you're focusing your initial point, and then you're like, okay, we go from there.
Nailing which problem to solve. And it's so funny hearing you mention like tech people do just like cool stuff, like building cool stuff. And it's like, cool. This is great, but we also need to make money at the end of the day. So I think you guys have nailed the community aspect, and we will talk about that soon. But I do want to dive into like building an AI business, building a successful AI business, which is something you guys can talk to. Where do you prioritize capital? Where do you prioritize spending? And is it in talent? Is it in the platform itself? Or is it something else in the early days? Maybe you haven't quite got product market fit yet. Harini, what do you think?
Yeah, I think validating the, I mean, if you're pre-product market fit and you're trying to get to validate the idea, these days, I think an MVP, just hypothetically, it doesn't cut it anymore. Like you can actually build, you know, a functional product with AI, right? So either getting to that point where you can actually give something in the hands of the user and able to move quickly. So building a team is kind of the area you should be spending first. A team that is actually going to be, you know, agile and move fast, not like in the traditional sense, like let's build a feature for X amount of, you know, weeks and months. So something that can be quick, adaptive and responsive with the user and build out a product until you kind of get to the product market fit. That's kind of crucial. And after you hit product market fit, then you kind of invest more in like sales and that side of things.
Shams, we've got a product and Harini's saying, help me find great team members. Who are you looking for and how many members in those early, early days?
So I guess it depends on the product, right? But you need someone that can build it and then someone that can sell it. And then it depends on, what you're building. So
as long as you're not hiring like Soham Parikh's kind of folks, but I don't know if you heard about that.
As long as you're not hiring who, sorry?
There's a guy called Soham Parikh who's been the talk of the town. He's a guy who is working with 9 YC companies, I believe. So he's like somehow managed to do that. So that's a...
Oh my gosh. Red flags, guys. Yeah. And how do you find out about this? Is it in all the tech chats? Like, you know, this guy, he's bad news. He's coming for a startup near you.
Someone exposed on Twitter saying they tried to hire, then they realize, and then it slowly is like a ripple effect where every company out there that's you know, kind of coming out and saying, oh, they're actually working with that person.
Oh my gosh, this is why I love this show. One minute you think we're talking really dry technical concepts, and then it's like spicy Y Combinator like dramas that are going on. Love it. Look, we're often talking about losing our best
startup talent and most mature, incredible AI companies to San Fran. Happened to have build ship two guys. As soon as you guys got big, Shams ran away. how do you feel about making the move? Was it the right thing to do, Shams?
I think it's not like it's not permanent, right? It's not like lost forever.
Good.
So one thing I realize now, it's like it's July and it says called as Sydney. So I'm like confused. It's supposed to be summer here. So that's definitely like not going to stick around for too long, potentially. But I would say it's a more competitive space. So it kind of like helps you grow faster as well. I think like Australia is it's great for like helping you getting started because of such a wide open space and there's so many opportunities. Versus I feel like San Francisco is like super dense and there's so many people competing for, even though there's a lot of resources, it's still heavy, like very competitive, right? So you kind of feel like you look around and you're like, oh, if I don't do better, I'm going to miss out. So it's like, it's a lot more intense.
It's also good for building the branding, right? Like Shams is doing like a hackathon with Replicate and 11 Labs. So a lot of collaborations like that are feasible, much more easier in SF. So,
I am desperate to go. I'm going to come visit. I'm going to come to the hackathon. I'm going to win it. It's going to be great. I hear that the talent density is much larger. There's a lot more people that have, you know, years of experience as a startup operator to choose from in San Fran. But to your point, they also have a lot of other startups to work for in San Fran. Is it better or is it worse for hiring, Shams, do you think?
Yeah, we still haven't hired anyone here yet. So we still haven't figured that part out because it is a lot more expensive, right? So because of how competitive it is and how the cost of living is. But there is a lot of talent but the problem is like, yeah, how do you incentivize them to come work with you and how do you maintain them? Yeah, seems potentially a lot more competitive as a startup versus, so I think for us, we've been remote first company from the start because we started during COVID and so that has been like very advantageous to be able to just look at talent without a geolocation and be able to see like, okay, this person is great. And then we just like work remotely. I think, yeah, we haven't met a lot of the people we work with in person.
Yeah.
I feel privileged to have met you both. What do you think, Harini? Have you got a star hire that you're desperate for? Maybe we could find them through the show.
Yeah, I mean, we are looking for hiring a star marketing person, but maybe that's a place we can hire from. But yeah, I think overall hiring remotely, we have definitely done some mistakes. We have done some great hires as well. So there's like a lot of really great folks across the world tapping and finding them. If you do find the right talent and fit for your company, it's good. And especially if in the early days of a startup, you want to operate leanly, maybe hiring from SF is not a great idea. So that's kind of how we started and began building the team. I think we have figured out what works and what doesn't work at this point through some mistakes and good things.
Without naming names, what was your worst hiring mistake that startups just need to know across the board? Don't do what we did in this one instance.
I mean, I think I'm glad we didn't do like Soham Parikh type of hard mistakes. But one of the things we did learn through the process is like if you're especially hiring remotely, try to work together in a project, try to actually get a feel for how the person is in working day to day. Because sometimes people are really good in interviews, but not in actual work collaboration or it really becomes very apparent what is working or not working when you work together on a project. So, yeah.
I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit more about brand. When you mentioned that you're looking for a marketing hire, I would like to push back. You guys are so incredible at brand. Genuinely, your posts on social media and elsewhere, your incredibly beautiful merch. You guys are one of the startups, I think, that just maybe you know what you're looking for in a marketing person, but yeah, you guys have a natural affinity and talent for it. Did you actively decide this was important, or are you just kind of have you just got the taste, which is apparently the biggest moat when it comes to building an AI company? Shams, what do you think? You're a natural in this space too.
So as you can see, with like all the vibe coding, making products is becoming a lot easier. And then, but the problem is like, how do you tell people that my product is the best product to use versus like, okay, this is the feature that it has. And then now you can just ask like whatever LLM to be like, look at this app, see the features, write a documentation of the features, and then give it to another LLM to generate that app, right? So then it becomes more of like brands are, it's like a trust thing, right? So it's like, do you want to communicate quality? Do you want to communicate excitement, right? So I think that's why it's important. I would say like, if you think about Coca-Cola, it's more branding than how the secret recipe. There is a little bit of a secret recipe, but it's a lot more branding. So I think potentially like software could end up being the same. So
yeah, like why do I wear Lululemon activewear? I don't want to go to the gym. I don't want to work out. So I will wear something that I like the brand of, even if it's like triple the price. Probably the quality of the material is okay, but not that much better than the competitors. It's the brand loyalty. It's the vibe that you get when using it. It's the fact I know what I'm going to get when I go there. I know what size I am. I know I'm talking about fashion, not tech. But Harini, when you decided this was important for BuildShip, like I've seen you wheel in when your knee was, or your leg was affected, and you're wheeling in with a, you know, I don't even know what it's called, because you've got a big launch, and it just generated so much attention and virality online. Are you doing it because you see a direct impact in your customers, or is it kind of like table stakes now? Everyone has to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it is table stakes. I would say like it's becoming more and more like what is actually memorable. If there are like X number of similar products, what is actually that you are connecting with, or like you're figuring out something in your feed in that 1 second, what are you actually going to stick around and continue watching it? I think that's what we are trying to figure out as well, where a brand is kind of associated with memorable. You think about that product when you want to start building something. And I think Shams has done a great job with the merch, where we are trying to actually do these events and hackathons, and this will be part of it. Maybe Shams, if they have it, you can show it to the folks here.
This is video on Spotify now. It's a new thing that we're doing. So anyone watching, we'll give Shams a chance to show off something incredible merch on the show.
I can bring it.
Yeah. The point was like, I think distribution is the key almost. Product, and everybody can build products these days. High quality product combined with a great distribution that becomes part of your story of your company. That's what it is.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness.
Don't have any
okay, back. So everyone listening needs to be looking right now. There's no excuse. We've got it everywhere. We've got a Campbell's soup in the style of BuildShip. It's absolutely gorgeous quality merch too. Like, this is something you guys don't skimp on. It's not just great brand. It's beautiful
important.
Quality.
See, this is like,
guys.
Pink and leather.
But to your point earlier too, Shams, you said, you know, what do we need to be known for? Brand in and of itself as a word doesn't mean anything. Is it quality? Is it humor? I'm thinking of those two just personally as a customer is what comes through. How did you realize those two things are really important for our product and how they need to be integrated across everything we do and every communication that we publish? How did you decide what was important for BuildShip?
I mean, as a founder, you spend a lot of time working on your company and your product, and you want to communicate that. And then so it's like, I don't want people to like get a very low quality t-shirt with low quality print, and that's like they look at that as like, I'm not going to wear that. So, but then it's,
yeah.
And then sometimes people see it as like a checklist. Oh, like we need t-shirts, we need hats. So that's kind of like misses the point of communicating something.
Yeah, it's such a great point. It's like we need a hoodie, we need a cap, we need a keyring. And it's like, you're taking all the joy out of beautiful merch, which like what a shame when it can be so beautiful. The amount of delight that it inspired a whole room of Googlers, myself included, when you guys showed the merch, it affiliates that sense of delight with BuildShip, right? Have you noticed that?
We try, I guess. It's the same. It's like you want to put in effort the same way.
Yeah, that's the kind of feeling we want to invoke in kind of the users who try the product as well. But it's also like the sense of like when you try some other product or some other company's merch, what it's kind of like subconscious, but you kind of start associating the quality with the product, potentially with the company. And that kind of translates. It's not kind of verbally told, hey, this is what we are going after, but it's the feeling of excitement.
This is a brand that doesn't skimp out on their merch. They have an eye for detail. They have a sense of humor. They've got a uniqueness. Stuff is kind of seeping into our bones without us realizing, and I'm obsessed with it. One last question on that before we get on the spicy rapid fire. Shams, how do people earn merch? How do they need to interact with you? Like what's happening with that?
So we're launching a couple of hackathons. We have one in next Saturday, so the 12th of July, in SF. I think Herney is organizing one in Australia, in Sydney, some like later in the month as well, potentially. And so now it's, you can try it, try the product, play around, and you'll win some merch. And we have other merch as well, yeah.
You can also like build something and tweet about it. If someone does, you know, we'll DM you with some merch.
All right, developers listening, you've heard what you need to do next. I didn't turn on my battery. 1 second for the rapid fire. Whoops. 35 episodes and I still have fun little tech lectures. Okay, to finish this amazing interview, we've got some spicy rapid fire questions. This is the stuff that's going to, you know, get you all hot under the collar because, you know, I'm trying to really test you guys. So, Harini, without naming names, worst hire and why?
Oh, someone we had to let go on literally the next day after we hired because of certain issues with the way they worked together. Yeah.
Great answer. Shams, what is your worst? Oh, I was going to ask the exact same question. What kind of new customer would you say no to? Who's not allowed to use BuildShip?
Someone that just like starts by like trying to just ask for features without even trying the product, or like ask for something that doesn't exist. And then it's in the product, it's just like we have a lot of value already if you haven't built out something. And then just, yeah, so it's like
they're just going to be impossible to please, right?
The less people pay, the more demanding they are.
Hot take. Isn't that funny? Who's your favorite kind of customer then? Like they just a willing participant, happy with it. They already love it, right?
I think it's not, doesn't have to be actually. Like they can be disappointed in some aspects and we'll help improve it. But I think it's when someone has a real problem that they're like tackling and they're clear rather than I have an idea and I need you to help me build it. But versus like I have an existing business that's like operating and then it needs a technical implementation or a technical solution. That's usually more interesting and more exciting to be like, okay, this is going to be eventually going to create value in the world because like BuildShip itself, it's just a solution, right? It's where do you apply it that creates impact in the world? So I think those kind of customers are exciting.
Mate, what don't you miss about Australia? Be honest.
Probably two things.
Oh gosh, okay. Ouch.
NBN and Sydney Trains. So those
triggered.
Two.
Please discuss.
At least every time I'm back, I'm like, oh, the weather is so nice and it's beautiful, right? And then Sydney Trains decides to like go on strike or NBN cuts off because of rain or flooding. I don't know.
We're removing the third wall. This episode is recorded 4 days after it was scheduled because my NBN is still not working. I had to go to an Optus store and get a dongle and it's only 4G and I'm so mad about it. This is after 2 weeks of no NBN. Oh my God. Sorry, I just had to let that out. Everyone needed to know my NBN story, but it's true. It's true. Don't come back for the NBN shams. Just come back for the weather. Harini, tell me, as our last spicy question, then you're off the hook. Tell me a story about a social media fail or just something that did not turn out as you expected it to for Buildship.
I think it was probably our April Fool's Day campaign. Basically, we put together something really quick the day before. It didn't really land. I think that was probably a bit of a fail.
You didn't get cancelled. It just didn't land in the way you wanted.
It was not that bad. So if we didn't get cancelled, I mean, nobody kind of, it was not a big engagement that we thought it would be. That's all. So I think that's still a positive.
Yeah, that could be a lot worse. We're not going to cancel Buildship. Buildship's not. Yeah, you guys are nice. Don't cancel them. Sorry, Shams. Yes.
Another one was that we had sent like a nautical theme email, like, and then it was like, "Hey, Captain," and then someone replied, "It was like, I'm not a captain."
Someone didn't like that name, Captain, and they thought it's like we misunderstood their name.
Oh, so in the body of the email, you as a greeting, you said, "Hey, Captain," because the whole theme was nautical, sailing, all of that stuff. And they were mad about that?
They didn't get it, so.
You're like, guys, this is a great marketing campaign. Guys, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for coming on in the Blink of AI. Before I let you go, each of you, what would you like to shout out to the listeners? Harini, you start us off.
I would like to shout out that, you know, everybody in any kind of company should be like thinking about hiring like an AI automation engineer, someone who kind of goes around, figures out what they can optimize in their existing company or unlock new opportunities. And if that's something you're interested in doing, we have like actually a demo of what can be built with Buildship in 15 minutes. So we'd love for you to check it out and try it.
And Shams, what's your shout out?
So we released a few weeks ago the Buildship.tools, and that basically helps you vibe code your backend. So you can try that out to like help you get started. So it does make it a lot easier.
We will put links of those in the show notes. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, guys. NBN couldn't keep us down. I hope you have the best rest of your day. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Georgie.
Thank you, Georgie. Bye.
Thank you for listening to In the Blink of AI. You can check out the show notes for anything discussed in this week's episode, and we will be back next week. This podcast was produced by Day One, with music by Dan Hansen and visual artwork by Sophie Tyrell. If you loved the episode, please tell your mates, and I love AI news. Please share your thoughts and suggestions to GeorginaRoseHealy@gmail.com.
Hey, I'm Lucy.
I'm Carrie, and welcome to Mumbition, the podcast. We chat with incredible women sharing the hilarious, messy, and brilliant truth about mixing motherhood and chasing dreams.
Because building a business while building Lego empires, not always easy, but definitely possible.
So grab a coffee, probably reheated, tune in, and join our community of women who get it.
Mumbition, the podcast for mums daring enough to do both. Unapologetically.
Available now wherever you squeeze podcasts into your day.